Tonight, I'd like to talk about relationships, second talk in this series for this month, again, in the context of this overall theme of Dharma and daily life. And in particular, looking at how relationships can be a gateway into oneness. Last time we talked about the sense of other, that sense of separation, but relationships also provide this gateway into this deep quality of interconnection. This is the release of the separation, of a sense of distance, and releasing what keeps us separate, keep that sense of otherness. And this is some of the deepest places relationships can take us. They have that potential to take us into that deep quality of connection, of unity, of non-separation. When even the paradox of two people talking or being together, that separation can fall away, so there's just the oneness. And so we'll explore how that can happen, what can be released, and also, you know, what that looks like. And this is really the interplay between the relative and absolute realities. Sometimes we talk about that, and it's helpful to come back to that because it gets a little confusing. Because we look out, we see, of course, there's Evan, there's Alice, and there's Deb and Cuba, and there's all these people who are separate than me. There's all the people online, you know, Beth and Carrie and Janelle, all those different people. But that's just a perspective that we've adopted, right? So there's a relative truth of that relative reality. But there's also the absolute reality, which is also present, is also a possibility. And so we're going to explore that tonight, how it's a shift of perspective, a shift of position. And then that separation falls away, or at least fades. Now, in terms of scope of relationship, you know, I'm holding that very broadly from the relationship between someone who's a romantic relationship with you, someone who's just a complete stranger, a friend, an acquaintance, someone who you just meet casually. All these are all potentials for that, the sense of oneness. It doesn't require us to have this soulmate, deep connection kind of a thing. It can simply be, it's available right here, right now. And even more so, it's not only external, it also relates to how we our own internal relationship, how we create a sense of separation or can create that sense of connection. And this is something, it's so important to realize that we can always be working on this. We can always be exploring how we create a quality of internal division and internal separation between ourselves, so the sense of me observing, me knowing, and another part of myself, the part I judge, the part I hold outside, and the release of that when we come back in to that quality of oneness, of non-separation. So what is this kind of mysterious experience of oneness? And I try to make it so it's not so abstract or new agey. And I think many of us, if not all of us, have had times in our lives when that sense of separation has been stripped away, taken away by the experience, by the situation. You know, it's just like this experience, the situation, was vaster than our normal sense of self could hold. It was like too big for us to hold in a confined way. And that moment, those experiences almost draw us into that quality of oneness, the quality of interconnection. We find in those times, there's a shift of perspective, a shift of relationship to ourselves and relative to the world. And that we can often find that there's this connection, that a depth of connection that so often seems so elusive. And these times aren't, you know, perfect. They have mixed qualities. Sometimes we separate, sometimes come back to that oneness and go back and forth. So sometimes that, this is my own life. And then some of you may have those similar experiences. Like when my daughter was first born, you know, those of you who have been able to have a child be born or have access to a newborn, there's often a quality of wonder that arises from that. That the experience is bigger than you can hold, bigger than your mind can comprehend and contract around. And what happens is that sense of idea of, you know, isn't that baby so cute? That doesn't really match the actual experience. And so something falls away. And it's what's revealed in its place is a depth of connection, the absence of separation. You know, there's a quality, there's a gradations of this, but there's a flavor of that. And I remember when my daughter was born, feeling that just naturally arise. You know, didn't hurt having 36 hours of sleep deprivation prior to that. The intensity of all the stuff that goes around sometimes with a challenging birth. But just that, okay, once you got through that, there's that wonder of just relating to another creature. And there's not that separation. I think, you know, those of you listening who are mothers know that. You know, that especially that those early days, there's that depth of connection that's available. Now, the opposite side of the spectrum is death, and how death can also bring that way of stripping away that normal quality of self and other, the normal sense of separation. One of the deaths I was relating to, or I was witnessing, was a back in the days when I was a wilderness ranger, a hunter had fallen off his horse and severely injured himself, was unconscious. And I offered some first aid and called the helicopter, but he ended up passing away before. I mean, there's nothing they could have done, but he passed away. And that sense of being out in the mountains, you know, the intensity of all that experience, being with his partner, and the sense of everything being stripped away, there's just an immediacy of connection to life. So birth can offer this, and death can offer this. Of course, death has all its sorrows, its grief, but also has this potential of that the non-separation. So as we go through these experiences, notice how you can kind of go back and forth between these two. Sometimes you can open to that stillness, that wonder, and that quality of relating that comes from that, that lack of separation, that sense of unity, of connection. And then other times you contract back. Okay, I'm filled with the grief, I'm filled with the overwhelm, and you become separate again. And you start to relax. You realize that sometimes I go into openness, sometimes I go into separation, and you start to build a dance between those two. Sometimes falling in love can have that quality. And when you have that sense of just the heart is so connected, you feel so intimate with this other person, this other being. And just like these other examples, sometimes it contracts into that sense of other and, you know, hurt feelings and irritation. And then other times it can fall back into that quality of love, of deep connection. Another time this happens is in disasters, when something is so, especially when the whole society or the whole, the culture, not the culture, but the group of people who are experiencing this, they all share that, like something has really shifted. You know, natural disaster, I remember after 9/11, we actually got married like a month after 9/11. And so like 5 days after 9/11, my wife and I were looking, my fiance at that time, we're looking at a wedding venue and looking at the final things. And it was interesting navigating the details of life, but still all holding this, something has shifted. You know, so many people had been killed, so many people have been harmed in this one moment. Now, again, there's the pain, there's the shock, there's the horror, and there's also the stripping away of that separation. Okay, so trying to, you know, draw that theme. Sometimes simply working with someone who you're having difficulty with, and finally listening and being heard. When that comes together, there's that intimacy, that connection that comes back. And of course, spiritual journey, spiritual practice, religious traditions. This is often what it's designed to do is help us navigate to that quality of wonder, that quality of interconnection. This heart's yearning is often what drives us and pulls us along the path. Now, sometimes this is framed as a relationship to God or to spirit, to something bigger than us. But I also like to reflect on how this relates to the relationship with each person, how we can find that sense of the sacred, the sense of the holy within another person and within ourselves. The two traditions that speak to this really beautifully are the Sufi tradition and also some of the early Christian mystics. So I want to share a couple poems from that, those traditions. This is first from Meister Eckhart, who is a Christian mystic. And he's talking to God, so hopefully that word isn't off-putting, but you can substitute whatever you like for that. That sense of the sacred, the sense of stillness, the sense of something that's the unknown. How should you love God? I will tell you. Love God as God is. This means love God as God is. A non-God, a not mind, a not person, a not imagine. More than this, love God as God is. A pure, clear one who is separate from all two-ness. Who is separate from all two-ness. And Meister Eckhart is pointing toward that the sense of separation is often in our ideas of, in this case, God, an idea of someone else. And when we're able to release those ideas, then that quality of oneness comes forth, the non-two-ness. Another one caught my eye today was, one should love God mindlessly. By this I mean that your soul ought to be without mind or mental activities or images or representations. Bear your soul of all mind and stay there without mind. Moreover, I advise you to let your own being you sink away and melt into God's being you. In this way, your you and God's her will become a completely one my, and you will come to know her changeless existence and her nameless nothingness. Just to read that last part again. Moreover, I advise you to let your own being you sink away and melt into God's being God. In this way, your you and God's her will become a completely one my, and you will come to know her changeless existence and her nameless nothingness. So he's speaking from a very deep, direct realization of oneness, and particularly that quality of oneness with God, with the Spirit. In this way, it points to that something releases in us as we relate to even another person, how that, again, that divine is found in each person. And then one more from the Sufi tradition. This is from Hafez. And again, listening to this, noticing how there's a releasing of concept, the releasing of idea, ways we define ourselves and others. I've learned so much from God that I can no longer call myself a Christian, a Hindu, a Muslim, a Buddhist, a Jew. The truth has shared so much of itself with me that I can no longer call myself a man, a woman, an angel, or even pure soul. Love has befriended Hafez so completely, it has turned to ash and freed me of every concept and image my mind has ever known. Love has befriended Hafez so completely, it has turned to ash and freed me from every concept and image my mind has ever known. And such beautiful words. And it points to that when words release from us, not only words, but the actual meaning, that the sense of separation the words hold, what arises forth is that oneness, that lack of separation. Does it matter if we're relating to our beloved or to a complete stranger, a dear friend, a child, a parent. It's available. And it's also can quickly come up with a sense of idea and separation. So let's explore that quality of separation a little bit. So we talked about this quite a bit 2 weeks ago, that creating the sense of otherness, the sense of someone outside of us. Because when we start to become interested in this quality of oneness, or we start to have taste of it, we start to also notice how often we create that separation. It's like, wow, I'm like creating separation all the time. And we start to really, you know, struggle with that perhaps. Remember that quality of separation, of duality, of other, has its utility. This has its purpose. And it allows us to navigate through this world really skillfully. I mean, if I cut my leg, I wouldn't want to go up to the post carrier. I want to go to the hospital. I know which direction to go. I start to know what's the right way to approach one person versus another person based on their experience, their diversity, their life. But we start to have this perspective that it's not absolute. I think that's the rub, is that we take this normal way of creating separation that we use as a tool and see that as an absolute reality, as something that is, that's the bottom line. That's, there's nothing beyond that. And so Dharma practice and many spiritual traditions are learning to see through that separation, to see through that relative world, to also touch and connect with the absolute. And so that way the absolute holds that relative reality, the relative reality of separation, but also realizes that's not the whole story. There's also this deeper reality that's moving through everything. So just to touch upon a couple pieces around this tonight, this is creating the sense of other. Now, relationships, as we all know, really create a mirror for us. They mirror our wounding, our hurts, our unresolved issues. It's what often relationships really elicit to us, elicit in us. And so they reveal in that way our pain. They reveal what's not resolved. Relationships highlight this in some ways, something no other can do as well. Because we can be in solitude and work with our own minds and have a lot of stuff come up. But once we actually interact with another person, that's where things really start to, the burner gets turned on high and the boiling starts to happen in a deeper way, a stronger way. So as practitioners, we learn to have a capacity for that. We learn how to balance the tender parts, the painful parts, and how to hold them. How do we hold them with compassion, with wisdom? How do we actually learn to see through them, to see through the unnecessary suffering that may be caused by how we relate to it? Now, if we don't see this, then separation becomes really, it's our go-to way of creating that distance, creating that sense of protection. Right? So learning to feel, okay, there's that pain, there's that rub. Can I hold that with a quality of spaciousness, a quality of openness, as we talked about last month with the emotions? Another thing I want to touch on in this separation section is back to the Buddhist teaching around conceit of self, magga. So conceit of self. And this is, it's really, it seems like complex, but it's really a basic way that when we look out on another person, we're constantly kind of comparing how we are in relationship to them. I'm the same as them. I'm different, or I am different. I'm better or worse. Okay, so it's those three options. I'm better than, I'm less than, or the same as. And as you look around the room, you can find that it's like a very deep way that pops up that you say, okay, I'm relative to this person. I'm higher than them. I'm lower than them, or the same as them. And of course, this is all ways of creating separation. Even that sense of sameness, there's a way of assuming that we're there's a way that we abstract from that, that oneness with that. Now, this particular conceit of self is one of the deepest fetters that's released as we go through the journey of awakening. So, you know, just to realize it persists even after we have a lot of opening, a lot of deepening along the path. So separation, creating this sense of separation. So then what is needed to help us release into that oneness? You know, what is needed to bring forth around that? I think, you know, outside of those more intense experiences, there's rarefied experiences I've talked about around birth and death and disaster and falling in love. How do we can bring that to more of an ordinary way of relating? I think there needs to be enough safety, enough trust that we can relax. Now, if we feel so guarded, it's going to be hard to open to that quality of oneness. And how much is enough? You know, we don't have to have absolute safety, absolute trust, just enough so that we can start to dance between that relative and absolute. So what I mean by that is we know that maybe there's someone that I feel a little uncomfortable with or apprehensive around, and I can realize, okay, there's that part of me, and I can tend to that when that's needed. And I can bring that separation forward when I need to. But I can also play with that quality, releasing that separation, releasing that quality of distance. And then, you know, let's say they're starting to do something that's harmful, then I, you know, feel that sense of separation, and I take care of myself. I draw a boundary. I draw that line. If you reflect back to those poems I read, each one of them spoke to this release of concept, the release of idea. When we release the idea so deeply, we allow the actual experience to be felt right there. This is really what's common. It's pointing to what's beyond thought. Now back to another Sufi mystic, Rumi, this famous poem. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. So out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing. Okay. Right there, there's that concept of what's right and what's wrong. Again, there's the relative truth of that that we have to tend to, that we have to know and acknowledge. But there's also, from the absolute, we're going beyond those ideas. So there's a feel. And in that place, I'll meet you. And when the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. It's such a beautiful image. Just even as you sit and listen, can you imagine joining us all in that field? If you relax the idea, the story, even the sense of me and all the stuff you have to do, and just relax that for a moment, even just for a few seconds, how there's a richness that starts to come forth. There's a fullness that starts to come forth. The world is too full to talk about. No words can capture that. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. And again, this direct pointing toward oneness, to the lack of separation. And just a simple few phrases, he points to that whole, the way to do it is simply releasing the story. That's why we emphasize it so much in our practice. What's the breath actually feel like? Not the thoughts of the breath. What's the sensation feel like? Not the thoughts of it. That teaches us this simple technique, simple way of shifting our perspective to relate to life how it actually is through our senses instead of through our mind. And then we translate that into much more complex things, like the sense of me walking around, the sense of the other person. And we say, oh, there's a relative reality and importance of that. But there's this absolute that if I drop below it, what's left is that wonder, where the world is too full to talk about. And just to finish this little poem, I'll just read the whole thing. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the door sill where the two worlds touch. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. So I'm hoping by sharing these Sufi mystics and the Christian mystics poems, you start to get this heartfelt sense of that lack of separation. You start to get a real feeling tone of the potential of that, how it's beyond words, beyond ideas. So here's a very hopefully concrete practice that relates to the homework. Is when you see another person, I was doing this when I was just taking the dog for a walk and seeing someone from a distance and someone I didn't know and feeling, okay, there's all the waves of separation. Like, you know, am I going to cross or they like me or all that stuff, even the labels you might interject on another person and start to just peel those layers off, like almost one by one. Say, okay, there's that layer. Let me peel that off. Let me acknowledge it. Let me see it, and then choose not to engage in it, not to add to it. Start to notice what we add to that moment, that person's experience, the history around them, what they remind you of. This is part of your prejudice, your bias, your racism, your sexism, your ageism, your ableism, whatever you put on this other person. And just notice, okay, that's I'm putting on it, and see if I can let that fall away. Those of you who were here last week and the week before, we did that little exercise, just gazing at something inanimate and letting all the layers fall away so then we can connect directly with the essence of that. And we're taking that same thing into the complexity of relationship. Now, with people who we know very well or someone we're romantically or sexually involved with, you know, sexuality, for example, can have this deep sense of merging and oneness, but also, of course, can have all the other elements of, you know, shame and judgment and neediness and, you know, control. All these different dances come on. And if we start to really judge ourselves, like I can should only be open-hearted, bathing in the sense of oneness, we're going to negate and repress all that sense of separation. I think it's much healthier and ultimately more fruitful to just be willing to see both. You say, okay, here's the separation. Here's that neediness. Here's that longing. And here's the strings attached. And then here is also the quality of oneness. Like, you know, the mothers and the fathers in the room, you know, you have that connection with your children that you want them. There's a way that you can connect with them being purely just how they are and just delight without any influence. And then you really rather them clean their room up or do their homework or brush their teeth at night. There's the control that comes in. So you start to let yourself dance back and forth between the control and the release of that control. So you both elements are needed. Both elements are present. And this is where we start to see the other person as they actually are, as we start to peel back those layers. So you start to relate to them. Actually, this is a funny phrase, but you can think of them as seeing the perfection in their imperfection. You know, seeing the imperfect quality of being human and seeing how there's a perfect expression of that. And in that perfection, there's nothing that needs to be done other than to simply release your own sense of separation and allow yourself to connect. So practicing in this way, watching those layers of separation that arise, and I start to name them. There's the defensiveness. There's the protectiveness. There's the projection. There's the hurt. Practice releasing so we can truly connect with that other being. And this is meant to be an alive practice. Doesn't matter if you're in a committed relationship, if you're married or not married, have a life partner or not. None of it matters. It's how we relate to this other person. And then once you start to release some of that, so there's that connection, then you start to dance with how they're spontaneously arising in this moment and how you're arising in that moment too. And doesn't that sound wonderful? Like instead of two people coming together and one's trying to do the tango and one's trying to do the foxtrot and it's just like not working, you say, okay, let's actually meet how the person is right there and meet how we're arising in that moment. And this is back and forth. You're going into this condition, I want you to be a certain way, to that release of that. Just like the inhale and the exhale. There's a moments of oneness, moments of separation. And this is also equally applies to our relationship with ourselves. Okay, this is the deeper work. I don't know if it's deeper, but it's there's the dummy or the four foundations of mindfulness. There's a line in there where the Buddha talks about, you know, practicing inwardly and also outwardly. And I often wonder, like, what does he mean by that? What does he mean? And perhaps he meant this, that the way that we relate to ourselves is identical to the way we relate to the external. And the way we relate to the external is identical to ourselves. So start to notice how you divvy up parts of yourselves. You can look how you divvy up parts of your body. I like this part, but I don't like that part. I like this part of my mind. I don't like this other part. I like this emotion. I don't like that one. I like this personality trait, but I don't like that one. And how that creates that division, that sense of separation. So notice how that's really grounded in and based in that sense of belief and thought. And so it's right there. Simply a shift of releasing that thought, believing that thought, and connecting with what's here right now. So the absolute starts to hold the relative. This is just a simple shift of perception. It's a shift of perception that's available in every moment. Right? We can shift into separation. We can shift into oneness. We have a lot more practice with the separation. That's much more familiar. It grounds us. We know who we are. We know who you are. It's really familiar. So we have to be willing to go into that wonder, to that unknown. And then we start to learn to dance and dance with that, again, that spontaneous arising, delighting in the uniqueness of each person, the unique expression, but also holding the paradox, it seems, of that connection, that lack of separation. I'd like to just finish around this talk tonight with this poem by Mary Oliver, When Death Comes. And this poem I've used many different ways, and it's a beautiful poem. But the part I want to particularly highlight is that quality of delighting in the uniqueness. But that uniqueness is held by this bigger perspective of non-separation, of oneness. So When Death Comes, by Mary Oliver. When death comes like the hungry bear in autumn, when death comes and takes all the bright coins from his purse to buy me and snaps the purse shut. When death comes like the measles pox, when death comes like an iceberg between the shoulder blades, I want to step through the door full of curiosity, wondering, what is it going to be like, that cottage of darkness? And therefore, I look at everything as a brotherhood or a sisterhood. And I look upon time as no more than an idea. And I consider eternity as another possibility. I think of each life as a flower, as common as a field daisy, and as singular. and each name a comfortable music in the mouth, tending, as all music does, toward silence. And each body a lion of courage and something precious to the earth. When it's over, I want to say all my life I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to have simply having visited this world. All right, if we could just sit quietly for a few moments, letting those words settle. All right, so in a moment, we're open to questions and sharing. I want to talk about the homework. So, yeah, it looks like it pasted into the, chat. Thank you, Ken and Kathy. Let me read it. So hopefully you got a copy of it. There's some over someplace in the room. So relationships. So the title of this talk is Gateway to Oneness. So become interested in the sense of separation, experience, and relationships of all categories. Okay. Notice how you naturally assume a sense of separation, a sense of self and other, of distance, as you relate to another person. Doesn't matter if it's someone you're very close to or someone who's a complete stranger or any place in between. And now notice, where does that separation exist? Where does it land? Where does it live? And what maintains it? And this is part of that reflection. Like, start to really notice, spend some time noticing that separation and holding these questions, not as intellectual questions, but saying, where does that separation actually exist right here as I see this other person? Right? It might be the guardedness. It might be the memory. It might be the projection. It might be the shyness. It's up to you to see what's there for you. And then practice gently, gently releasing those layers of separation between you and the other person. Okay? So it may not be a complete release. It might be just a few layers. But start to notice as you release how that shifts the perspective from separation toward oneness. And even just a little bit of that softening, a little bit of being less distant, releasing that quality of two-ness, of separation. And then from there, practice interacting with this other person with this shift of perspective. This is a kind of a big homework, actually. But it really brings Dharma into daily life. You know, can I talk to another person and feel, okay, there's the separation, there's the layers, and can I see through that and try to connect through that into the oneness? Being patient with yourself, realizing that sometimes there'll be more separation. This is natural. Sometimes more oneness, more connection. This is also natural. You know, practice with a pet, you know, a loved pet who doesn't cause a lot of stir up on you, and see how you can connect with that quality of oneness. And then bring it into a little bit more complex relationships. All right, so hopefully that makes sense. And next week we'll have a chance to do some small group exploration around that. And let's open to any questions. So anyone online like to share anything? And those on and here in the room, I'll have to repeat the question since we had a system fall down today with the tech stuff, so it's all right. Anyone have anything they'd like to share online? You're welcome to unmute yourself. Maybe you don't have permission to unmute yourself. No, you do. Okay, let's see if there's anyone in the room who'd like to share anything. Yes, Kava.
Mm-hmm. And I notice that when I have these habits that I have self-growth, we're harder to hold it without judgment.
Sure, let me make sure I understood your question. So she was reflecting that she appreciated that relationship with oneself is also a relationship. And how the ones that cause suffering, it's much harder to relate to it without creating more separation. Is that the essence of it? And why do you think that is? So when those feelings are uncomfortable, so there's a tendency to want to push them away instead of allowing them to be felt, to be experienced. Now, it's interesting because at first you said that the ones that cause suffering versus the ones which are suffering, which are painful. See the distinction? Because we could have I could like drop this thing on my foot and have the pain of it. And it's like, okay, that's the pain. But the suffering comes when I say, oh, why did I drop that? You know, everybody thinks I'm a klutz now. You know, I just add all this stuff to it. That's the added on suffering. But you're talking more about just the pain itself, the discomfort, the unpleasantness, emotional, physical, mental. Yeah. So I think the question is around the turning toward the pain. And I think we always have to bring a quality of, you know, compassion to ourselves, compassion to our capacity to open to discomfort, to open to pain. Because, I mean, we're really wired to turn away from pain. We're really wired to escape from it. And so we're asking, well, how about you just sit with it? Like, that seems completely opposite of what we've, you know, been trained to do, not only in our lives, but all our ancestor, all our DNA is kind of designed to escape from pain. Okay, so there's a while you have to acknowledge that to realize that often pain can be too much, then our capacity to hold it can not be up to the task of holding it. You know, maybe it's because it's so intense, or maybe because it has a lot of charge. Maybe the pain, you know, the low back pain reminds you of the pain you've had, the same pain for the last 20 years every day. There's a whole lot of momentum we add to that, for example. So it's helpful to step back. You know, I always like the image of stepping back. Okay, so you may not be able to step back and see the pain, but maybe you can step back and notice your resistance to the pain. Or maybe step back and notice your resistance to the resistance of the pain. You know, just we do the same thing with judgment. You may be judging yourself and you can't quite see what you're judging because there's too much charge around it. And you can step back and see the judgment. Or maybe step back and see your judgment of your judgment. So just however you can step back. And it's often what this asks of us is some way to kind of broaden our field of knowing, our field of observation. And this is what I do myself personally, and hopefully it helps, is that when I'm able to do this, I'm able to hold other experience equally. Okay, let's say my left hand is full of pain, physical pain, emotional pain, whatever you want. Feel that. And if I'm just feeling that, it's overwhelming. But if I can feel my right hand, which let's say represents my breath or the breeze going through maybe that's not a good example in this room, but you know, the sense of me connecting with the chair or the sight of the breeze moving across the branches. If I can hold that equal to the pain, suddenly my awareness, my mindfulness itself is rebalanced. And my capacity to hold that pain is rebalanced. Okay, when I lose that other broader awareness, I tend to narrow down. And instead of being mindful, I actually tend to shift into kind of reactivity, a sense of tense way of relating to that moment's experience. And then it becomes too much to hold. Yeah, so that broadening of awareness, broadening of attention. And sometimes you can even say, okay, I'm going to ignore the pain for a few minutes, explore something that's actually calming, that's pleasant in my experience, my environment, and then I can come back and go back and forth. And it often teaches us that we're not going to be stuck with this forever. And sometimes, I mean, we don't also want to just ignore, skillful discernment. Like, you know, if my leg is hurting because I'm sitting still, maybe it's time to shift my body. You know, or maybe I'm really struggling over a relationship hurt. Maybe it's time to have a conversation with that person or have a conversation with someone else. If it's a person who's able to really hold your experience, just the act of sharing it starts to broaden out the narrowness of it. So the basic message is the more narrow our focus, the more difficult it can be. But if you can say, okay, I've talked to my friend, I've talked to my therapist, I can start to broaden out my perspective. I not feel like I'm holding it all by myself. Does that help at all, Kaba? Great, thank you. All right, let's see if there's anyone online who has anything to share. So you can either raise your virtual hand or unmute yourself.
Tim?
Yes, go on, Kathy.
I am so interested in this because it feels like something I've deferred. Well, I notice since I'm more aware, since I started this practice, which is not that long ago, I noticed my funny judgments. Like I'm going out the door and I'm seeing someone and my first thought is, oh, well, it's a really strange outfit or that's a really nice looking, person or all this stuff. And, then sometimes my next thought will be, oh, that was really funny to be thinking that because actually, I don't know. Maybe they're, I don't know anything about this person. The stuff I've just thought was about me. So my habit, I think, is more the other one where I compare without and then reflect later. So... Yeah, any guidance on that?
Sure. So the comment was around noticing the comparing mind, seeing a person and saying, okay, they're dressed nicely or they're not dressed nicely. And sometimes there's a reflection like, oh, that's just my mind doing that and able to kind of see that pattern. But more often it comes inwards afterwards, right? You reflect after the fact and in the middle of it, you're kind of caught or stuck in that cycle of comparison. Is that right, Kathy? Yeah. And so how to work with that, how to see through that. So I would recommend you try to simplify the whole process. Now, sometimes we're trying to, ride our bike without our hands and juggling balls at the same time and whistling a tune. That's sometimes, the relationships get so complex. So keep it really simple. Like go maybe sit out in the park on a park bench. And there's just people walking around and maybe you see them from a distance and just see and say, okay, my whole purpose is to notice the comparing mind and noticing and practicing releasing the details of the comparison and connect with the actual quality of comparison itself. So just kind of simplify the whole process. Don't do this with someone that you know really well because you're going to be interacting and it's going to get swept away. But like you're just sitting there, you're watching someone walk and, okay, where's the comparing mind? It's like, oh, I like that dress. Let go of the idea of dress and notice almost the generic quality of comparing. It's similar to like looking at aversion and craving. Like I may really want a drink of water and I feel myself moving toward it. Let go of the idea of water and just feel the impulse to move toward or the movement of away. Now we're taking comparison into that same framework, that same way of understanding. So we start to notice, oh, there's the mind comparing, adding that. So first you get a sense of that. And then you go like, it's almost like you drop underneath the surface of that to see, okay, what is the actual reality of this person? You know, what's the actual, if I can, and this is a hard practice because we're so conditioned to layer thought and projection and prejudice upon this person. And so you practice, okay, again, be compassionate. We all do this. You're learning to see it and start to release it and see, okay, what's underneath that? It's like you look a little bit more, look a little bit more closely and let yourself relate to them very simply. Right? Does that make sense, Kathy? Yeah, so give that a try. You know, go find a place where you can watch somebody. It could be right there in your house. Look out the window and watch someone walking by and notice what you add to the moment and see if you can see that comparing mind, what the flavor is like it, how does it shape in your mind and body, and then connect underneath that to what that person actually is. All right. Thank you, Kathy. All right. How about back here in person? Yes.
I'm listening to your instruction and enjoying the question. And I'm noticing I'm sitting here thinking and realizing that I try often to go toward your instruction that stepping back and listening too quickly before I really acknowledge my judging mind. Yeah. There's a part of me that wants to not acknowledge that mind does assess. Mind does. And I don't want to get it. And so I have to sway manually myself. But it does come. And I've had a case when I just sort of let myself be honest with myself. Like, I've been in that valley and I've had an opinion about somebody else. I had that thought. They're trying to just sort of stay confrontational with myself. So, like, you know, I mean, just don't pretend.
Yes. Let me just kind of managing this here. So the sharing was around that stepping back from judgment to observe it, how that sometimes can be used to not fully feel the judgment itself. And, you know, there's a questioning of that. Maybe it's good to actually acknowledge that and how perhaps there's a quality of not really allowing the judgment itself and how, yeah, is that? Yes.
Last summer, when you know, my the Black Lives Matter stuff came up, and a lot of my own prejudices,
yes,
myself, that I thought, right? I was so woke.
Yes. Yes. So that, yeah, exactly. That's right. That's right. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. So let me see if I can paraphrase for our Sangha online. So basically there's, and this, it's a really nice sharing. around how we have this idea of who we are as spiritual people. I'll come back and see if I'm completely missing the mark here. We have this idea of who we are as spiritual people. So if something presents itself, which is opposed to that, especially if we've been practiced a lot, we get really good at kind of just, okay, I'm just going to push that away. And it doesn't look like we're pushing away because we're going into metta, we're going into oneness. So it feels like we're still being spiritual. But, you know, the question that came from a lot of sincerity and discernment is noticing how that's, the ego is still intact. It's really it's this form of spiritual bypass that we're kind of going around that pain. And she talked about, you know, like last summer with the Black Lives Matter and seeing that, okay, I'm a, you know, a woke white person realizing maybe that you're not really as deeply as you take yourself to be. You know, I think as if we're honest, we all can relate to that. And there's a way of seeing that, that, you know, as meditators, we get averse to it and we can really misuse the practice to avoid seeing it. And it is a misuse of the practice. You know, and we can, but luckily the practice shows us, oh, you're kind of, you're always moving away from this experience. And so they say, okay, that's why the Buddha started with the first noble truth, there is dukkha. Okay, so you feel that dukkha arise and you let yourself sit with that. And noticing how being with it doesn't mean you're acting from it. In fact, the more you observe it, the less likely you're going to act from it. And especially when it starts to rub against that belief of who you should be and what you are, that's so helpful to sit with that, to start to let that, because that's much deeper work than going into equality of oneness. So really learning to own those shameful parts of ourselves, those parts we really disallow. And you know the difference between, you know, when you release into oneness as a way to avoid something, it has a different feeling than if you release to oneness by going through the dukkha. You know, when I think in Zen they talk about the way to samsara is through, the way to nibbana is through samsara. The way to liberation is through our dukkha. So when that arises, so first of all, just noticing that tendency is already 90% of the work. Right? If we don't see that tendency, then we're lost. So then you say, okay, that comes up, that tendency of moving into the oneness. So you pause with that. Just like you would, I mean, it seems kind of simplistic, but just how we, you know, like if you don't scratch an itch in meditation, you just sit still and you feel the itch. It's the same thing. You feel the urge to go into oneness, into metta. Sit with that discomfort for a while. Again, going back to Cubba's question, you know, around having that capacity, building that capacity around it. But if the capacity is there, and there's just that delusion, that not wanting to see it, say, okay, let me see a little bit more closely. Maybe let me write it out so I can really go from the abstractness of my thoughts to the clarity of writing it down. Sharing that in a group, just like you did here, I guarantee you're going to have a different relationship to it because you had the courage to share that. That courage to share something like that brings the energy that really overcomes some of the delusion around it. And delusion has such a strong power in our lives to keep us asleep. Like that poem from Rumi, don't go back to sleep, don't go back to sleep. So thank you for sharing that. Yes, Alice.
Can I follow up what you're saying about, going through dukkha or grisha mana, how 90% of it is recognizing that it's rising. When you notice those things rising and you acknowledge where they're coming from and you accept that that's who you are, what is the next step to continue this path? You're sitting in meditation with that itch. You're sitting with the itch. You feel it. You're saying, I have the urge to scratch it, but I'm still and just observe the meditation. The itch doesn't just go away. So at what point, like how do you break through that last 10%? Scratch the itch.
Yeah, so the question is around that 90% and how you get to that point, but that last 10% can be really difficult to see through. You know, like the example of an itch, like you don't scratch the itch. So how do you break through that last 10%? How do you get through it? And that's, that's the tricky part, is that that last 10% takes 90% of the time. the time. It's not, you know, we could draw some kind of strange equation that would capture it, but this is the hard, this is what makes it hard, is that seeing it, you can, if you don't see it, we're lost. So that's why I said 90% is seeing it. Maybe it's 80%, you know, it's something in there. But you see it, that's the key thing. But once you see it, then what do you do with that? How do you allow yourself to go through it? And this is the hardest part, and the most, because the most direct way is to do nothing with it at all, like simply observe it, simply be present with it. Right? This is really hard because we have all these sneaky ways we try to do something with. Like, okay, I'm going to add just a little bit of metta. I'm going to add a little bit of this or a little bit of that. And at some point, you exhaust all those possibilities and you just say, finally, let yourself surrender to it. I remember my teacher talking, I was talking about, you know, this something I wanted to really open to and fall into. And he said, you know, it was around stillness. And he said, you know, stop observing stillness and just let yourself fall into it. Let yourself wade into that stillness. And so there's, it's really that quality of surrender, the quality of complete release. You know, and depending on what we're talking about, if we're talking about an itch, you know, or physical pain, there's a time to just adjust that, you know, monitoring when the tension gets too much. You know, just like with Kubba's question, that's really important perspective to have. And there's also this quality of oneness that, okay, let's say we go there, that you're, say you're gazing at one of your children and you're just like, practically, they're asleep, so they're not doing anything that's annoying. They look beautiful. And you're just practicing opening to that. And you feel, you get to that, I'm almost there, but there's just this little something that's keeping me separate. And one teacher said, it's like you get to the spiritual door and you knock on it and then you have to let it open of its own accord. You know, and so it is the gateway of letting go, of surrendering, of as being as honest as you can, noticing any areas of unseen bias, of how you think you should be. And eventually it's something just opens in itself. It's like it almost pulls you through. Does that help, Alice? There's a lot of things we could cover in what you're talking about. And
yeah, I think I just need to learn more about discernment and when is it okay. Now we're stepping away.
Yeah, so around discernment, so a lot of it has to do with monitoring your inner tension around what you're observing. So if I'm observing something that's painful or uncomfortable, and that tension starts to rise to the moment it's like becomes predominant, or even, you know, its majority, maybe even 55% of my energy is going to the managing the tension, it's probably better to shift it in some ways. Maybe shift your posture, shift your mind, open to something different. Because that tension is just, it's easy to kind of misuse that and power through that and just creates more tension. Yeah. Yeah. So we could talk, you know, talk more specifically, sometimes the abstract. There's so many ways we can talk about it. Again, back to that relative versus absolute. Sometimes the relativeness, we need to really address that and see what that is exactly. All right. Thank you, Alice. All right, anyone online like to share anything? You guys are quiet online today. Oh, I see Melissa.
Yeah, hi. I guess I'm wondering to myself, I can imagine that the homework where you say practice releasing the layers of separation between you and another person. I'm kind of imagining to myself that if it were someone I didn't know, like someone on the street, this might be a pretty, not an easy exercise, but not too challenging. But then if I imagine someone else that maybe I don't have such a good relationship with, or someone where I have a little bit more complex of a relationship, then I start to wonder, well, what would that look like? And I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions, like if you're trying to work with a kind of a more complex relationship.
Sure. So the question is around complex relationships and how that homework seemed like it'd be easier with someone like a stranger. There's not as much projection because there's no history other than what you bring to the moment. But someone you actually have real history with, and you have a lot of maybe past unfelt feelings or whatever it might be, it is more challenging. And so I think it's like talking with Kathy's question, try to simplify it as much as you can. You know, see if you can simplify the problem so it just like a math problem. You know, you have all this complexity, you kind of narrow it down so it's just these little variables. So maybe pick a time where, you know, you're going for a walk, or maybe how about this, take a picture of the person and just gaze at the picture. So they're not, you know, they're not reflecting back on you. You just see that picture of that person who has some charge around it. And, you know, you see the picture, you get the things, the layers come up, close your eyes and just practice with those layers for a while. Let those kind of peel off and then open your eyes again and reconnect with that image of that person. And then do that over time. And I think that will start to kind of loosen some of those bigger charges. And then if you find a time when that person's kind of in a mellow mood and you're in a mellow mood, and you know, maybe you're walking alongside each other, just kind of get a way of playing with that a little bit. And so it may just be a little bit of letting go of some layer of that. It's amazing. Just a little bit of letting go actually can shift the relationship dynamics quite a bit. Because you start to actually listen to that person, how they are. I mean, you might be surprised at what comes up, and they might be surprised. So you don't discount the little bit of shift that sometimes a little bit makes a big difference.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And by the way, for those who want a challenge, you can do this with yourself. You know, look at yourself in the mirror and notice all that comes up. Close your eyes, let that fall away, and keep going till you feel a shift, some shift of connecting, not from the projections and ideas, but the essence of who you are in that moment.